G'day and welcome to our latest edition of the South Australian Playwrights podcast, which again could be episode 4, but again, we're not counting.
Okay.
I'm very lucky
like
today. I am counting. I just can't help but count. Because you see, episodes seem to be this numerical kind of paradigm. Anyway, I'm rejecting that. It's just an episode of the South Australian Playwrights Theatre podcast. And I'm very honoured today to have in the podcast studio the highly talented James McCluskey-Garcia.
Oh, stop it, Matt.
And the equally talented and good-looking Jimmy Lyons.
Am I not good-looking?
Well, you know,
More talented than good-looking.
So, your talent shone through. But as this is a podcast, they can't see you, so it doesn't matter.
Fair enough, yeah.
Today we're going to be talking about New Visions 1, which is a very exciting development for the SA Playwrights Company, where we get to explore new writing in South Australia and a whole bunch of new work in the form of a staged reading. And in this case, we'll be talking about The King by Jimmy Lyons.
Yeah, right.
So, Jimmy.
Yes.
What inspired you to write this play, The King?
What inspired me to write? So, I started writing this years and years ago. I think I wrote a draft of this, the first draft of this about 8 years ago. I was walking through a Costco, and there was this guy. I actually know him personally now, but I watched him. And he was selling an appliance, this high-end appliance. And he was selling it to someone who clearly did not have the means to buy this thing. It was like an $800 blender. This guy barely had two nickels he could rub together.
Yeah.
And this guy is a salesman. He's not saying anything about the actual product, how it works, the functionality of it. He's just appealing to this guy emotionally.
Yeah.
Mm. And then this guy is trying to walk away, but for some reason he can't.
And that's the key to sales, isn't it?
Like, it's an emotion. That's it. He's, you know, it's there's a great line from one of the guys who facilitated Brexit. He was on the, he said, when it comes to campaigns, facts are a smokescreen. Facts are a smokescreen, emotions matter.
Right.
So great salespeople appeal to your emotions.
Yeah.
So this particular salesperson just starts subtly emasculating this guy, saying basically, in so many words, calling him a loser.
Wow.
There's something about money and masculinity, isn't it?
Yeah.
The two things seem to go together. I don't know. Call me crazy, but I get the feeling. I get the feeling that like the more money you make, the sometimes various men feel that is a sign of their higher masculinity.
I think, as people have evolved, we still have that lizard brain, so men will, you know, not to be crude, will compare genitals. It's like, mine's big. But then society grows, and then you have...
And genitals have now become money.
Yeah, that's it.
It's like a big
stack. Now money is the proxy for your genitals. And it's like, then it's power. And, all those things really sort of live in the same area, so... Anyhow, so I watched the salesman start, and you know, he looked at it, he said, listen, if you can't afford it, then you can't afford it. And it's just,
wow.
And all of a sudden, I just see this, all of a sudden this guy takes this $800 appliance that he can't afford, takes it to the front and, you know, pays with that credit card.
Now, James, you are playing the role of Roger, who is the customer who gets duped into buying the enormously expensive barbecue.
Mm.
Have you brought any of your own life experience into this role?
Possibly in a previous relationship. I may or may not have been put upon by a previous lady, but certainly... Roger is a little far removed from my experience. Like, I try and, you know, not be put upon, like, to purchase or not to purchase. Well, you know, I mean, yes, I'm in a marriage and we have, you know, there's a whole, you know... I don't say, hey, can I buy a coffee today, sweetie? It's only $2. Like,
right.
I'm like, no, but...
There's certain spending thresholds I'm sure you have.
If it's like, honey, I came home and I bought a cruise for $10,000. You what?
Yeah.
You bought a $10,000 cruise. Mm. Couldn't you have spoken to me first?
Sure.
It's like a... You know, it's a
which is a healthy thing. we yeah. must all discuss.
That's right.
Our financial outlays with our partner, because it is a partnership,
but
isn't
James,
it?
James, you don't have any work. Why did you spend $10,000? I'm going to have to work all through the night.
In relation to your character, Roger, in Jimmy's play, Roger, he's a little bit disturbed.
He's a little bit. We find that out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Towards the end of the play. It's a really nice surprise and a nice twist. I think the audience will really enjoy it as well. Like, I don't know if they'll be expecting it that much.
Yeah. I don't know. Hopefully there is some surprise there. I mean, the other thing that really appealed to me was this, you know, there's the Me Too movement, and which I think is a great thing, and it's forced a lot of men to sort of take a look at this term that we bandy about, masculinity, and now we have this toxic masculinity. Mm. What exactly does that mean? So, in witnessing that interaction in the Costco so many years ago, it reminds me of this term, this toxic masculinity, this idea that men are supposed to behave and be a certain way.
Yes, which is social pressures put a lot of sort of misdirection.
Right.
For men who would ordinarily be quite reasonable, but they feel that in order to compete with other men, they need to be in control of everything.
Mm. Yeah, well, we've been told that, you know, since we were children. And listen, nature does support a bit of that. Like, we're bigger and we're physically stronger. And...
Ooh, and is it true? Is that actually true?
Biologically, are we bigger than women?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes. We're also biologically, you know, just the stronger than women, physically stronger.
Well, physically stronger.
Yes.
That's been proven by scientists.
Yes, that is a
reference.
It is a scientific fact, yes.
Can you quote a fact for us?
Yes, yes.
Is it a factoid?
Yes. So would you guys dispute that?
Well, I don't know. I've not done the research.
I would actually agree with that. It's based on science.
Yes. I don't think this is a far out there
thing.
I think you can go Google that and you can get a more
okay.
scientific definition.
Sure.
But I think we've equated that as civilization evolves, men still equate that with dominance.
Mm.
Is the fact that we can physically overpower someone, meaning that we're supposed to be the ones.
Or could it be that we are willing to overpower?
Well, that's the other thing.
That is our modus operandi, or a dysfunction, or an unsavory masculine modus operandi, is to overpower people as opposed to negotiate, or you know.
There is that, yes, there's that lizard brain concept too. We're not only capable of physically, but we're willing to. What men are willing to do, and that behavior has been reinforced now for thousands of years.
Mm.
And now as we become more self-aware, it's there's a certain kind of evolution I feel needs to happen. But in order for that to happen, you kind of have to shine a light on it. This is where art comes into play. You have... where you can take a look at these things and be a little bit removed from it and take a look and go, that reminds me of me. That reminds me of something. Mm. That doesn't look too pretty.
Right. Shining a spotlight on those aspects of yourself.
Sure.
You may not like.
Sure. I watched this interaction again, like all those years ago, and I was sickened by it. I was like, that's gross. What I'm watching here is gross.
Yeah.
And it wasn't overtly gross.
So did he remind you of a predator who was...
Yes.
Like attacking, they're about to eat a prey.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And he was being manipulative, but he was being manipulative in a specific way that he knew would work toward a man.
So you must have thousands of ideas in your head, because if that's what you had then, you must look at daily life and go, wow, there's another idea.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that one, I just didn't know where to take it when I initially saw it. But I was like, yeah, it's
interesting having that concept or observing that character. And it's something that you notice is a particular flaw or issue or something that needs to be explored.
Mm-hmm.
And then forming that into a kind of a scene or a story is the process of...
Yeah, and what does it mean to be a man in 2019?
Yeah.
It's an interesting question, because as a man and as a father and as someone who has, a partner, it's something that I look at. You're married. Both of you guys are married. Mm. You've been married a long time. Mm. So it's something you look at. So you don't want to, I don't want to relinquish this, quote, masculinity.
Yeah.
I don't want to relinquish it. But what does that mean?
But like, what is it? I mean, what is masculinity?
Exactly.
I mean, it is what it is. There is clear that you are of a particular gender. But in terms of your behavior and your role.
Yeah.
There are many right-wing commentators who would suggest that, you know, because we hunt, we have this particular role in society. I mean, that's obviously completely flawed in this modern era of equality.
Sure.
And so on, and misconceived. And not even very true in the history of civilization.
I think my dad's generation would say masculinity, there's a confidence, you stuff your emotions down, you don't let people know how you're feeling.
Why is that not masculine to be emotional in a situation? And like, for me, that's completely masculine. It's like, sure. If when I'm emotional, as well as intelligent, as well as verbose, it's like, oh wow.
Or it could be cultural, because I think Australians and, dare I say, British people often, to express emotion is considered not masculine, whereas possibly Mediterranean cultures can have more license to express emotion. And here I mean
some cultures general. Being masculine is being violent, is kicking someone's ass.
I'm at the point now when I greet someone, like if I greet you or maybe in the future you, Matt, like at the theater recently, I'm like, guys I haven't seen for a long time, I'm like, hey man, and I'll go kiss them on the cheek, which is a very European thing to do.
I noticed you knew that, James, when you came in. But that's fine.
Yeah, that's right. We'll do it. Was it a lingering kiss?
Yeah, no, you didn't.
Was it too long, Matt? Were you uncomfortable?
I had my cheek out there. It didn't happen.
Oh, see, so what I like to do is, I like to hold the kiss.
Yeah.
And then slightly turn my head at an angle and maintain eye contact the whole time. To me, that is masculine. If I can hold a kiss with another man,
it's a problematic thing.
Maintain eye contact.
I mean, well, you can't generally just kiss anyone you want, can you? I mean, you just got to kiss them.
Probably not.
There's certain protocols associated with it.
Sure. You could do that. Someone. You'd probably end up in prison.
This is the thing. There are lines that need to be crossed. And it just not generally crosses between, you know, the genders, but intergender and all that sort of stuff. Mm. What are the protocols?
Yeah.
You
know?
Because one person's comfort zone isn't immediately discernible when you first meet them.
No.
Unless you're in the theatre where you just kiss everyone.
Listen, I'm in my 40s.
Maybe I'm too forward by doing that to the
not girl, at all. Not at all.
In my life, I'm like,
not with me.
You're not at all.
Not with Jimmy Lyons.
No, I think at the moment you're in the theatre, you can kiss anyone you want. But can you? I don't want to do a Kevin Spacey on us.
Oh, my God.
Let's not mention
it. I wonder. I don't want this to haunt me in like 10 years' time. James, you kissed me in that 10 years ago.
But then look what Kevin Spacey did. Then he decided to hide behind
his can of worms. We're about to open them.
Well, no, I'm saying no. What upset me about Spacey is, listen, he was someone people admired because he was such a brilliant actor and producer creative person. And then these things come forward, and instead of taking responsibility for it, decides to hide behind his. That's how it came across. It's his sexual orientation.
Yeah.
And
well,
do you think that's spin? That's
no.
I'm just going to throw in the word allegedly, periodically, to get me off the hook for anything.
Yeah. Well, listen, it's this bothered the community I have in the LGBTQ community. Mm-hmm.
They were vilified.
Yeah.
He used
them as a smokescreen to absolve himself of responsibility.
More acceptable if you are in the LGBTI community.
Right. But it also came across as like he was blaming it on him being a closeted homosexual.
Yeah.
So he's
blaming this bad behavior.
Yeah. Okay. He worked in London.
But hang on, wasn't the guy like the kid like 14 at the time?
Yeah, that's the thing.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Sorry, I'm just going to keep saying allegedly. Just so there's like a beep. No.
Yeah, allegedly his name is Kevin Spacey.
Anyway, well, moving right along. Well, let's move away from Kevin Spacey. It reminds me of an interesting story. I had a play open in London once. Yes, it was at the Clapham Grand. It's a very lesser known venue in London, the Clapham Grand, and it was run by the Russian mafia, who happened to be in prison at the time, which is why we could put our play there. But when my play opened, the day after it opened, the guy, I think his name was Sergei, got out of prison, he comes into the theater and says, is going on here, and we said, "Oh, we're doing a play." No, we don't do plays here. This is strip club, and we got thrown out. And he turned it back into an exotic dancing venue. But anyway, that we don't.
No, it's okay, sir. But it's a play about a strip club. So
if only it were, but it wasn't. It was kind of an absurdist kind of, you know, existential.
Oh my god!
She just had the actress take the clothes off.
And we could have done that.
Yeah, that's extraordinary.
But you can't go there. That's not true. That wasn't in the contract before they started their roles.
Oh, gotcha. Mm.
Nevertheless, at New Visions 1, there won't be any of those shenanigans. All there's going to be is...
Much to the chagrin of Jimmy.
Much to the chagrin of Jimmy. But there's just going to be good, raw, theatrical ideas, including The King.
The King, yes.
Which is a terrific play.
Thank you.
It's a great play.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. We're really enjoying reading it. I'm actually playing a role as the salesman.
Yeah, and how?
And I've had to confront my own inner demons as I do that, in terms of how I manipulate people. I think, you know, we do it all every day and we're not aware of it.
Yeah.
Do you think you manipulate
people? Do you manipulate people knowingly?
Yes, but for good reasons. like when you say, okay, you know, Father Christmas isn't going to buy you that bicycle. I think that's evil for the purposes of good. It's a lie, but is it?
No. Yes, it is. It's not like, technically, yes. It's just
a complete lie.
Yes.
You get a clean room.
Technically, at the
end of the manipulation, it's a clean room.
Yeah.
It is, yeah. And that's a good thing.
You're using a lie to guide a child toward good behavior.
Yes. This sounds really dodgy.
Kant would say that Immanuel Kant had the categorical imperative. He would say that you would then try to apply that to every walk of life, and if it doesn't apply to every walk of life, then it doesn't work.
He was a wise fellow, wasn't he? Absolutely.
He's an absolutist. I think Kant doesn't see...
We can't live in these absolute extremes.
Yeah.
I can't agree with that.
I can't.
No, I can't. Sorry.
Yeah, he was an absolute... He saw things as kind of binary.
Categorized.
Yeah.
And then you have Mill. Like, Mill's law was more... That was utilitarian. It was a bit more nuanced. It was like greatest good for the greatest number of people. You get a bit more varied.
Anyway, as an expat living in Adelaide, let's take it back to the idea of playwriting and creating in the wonderful city of Adelaide.
Yes.
How have you, as an outsider? Well, you're not anymore. You're sort of a new welcome member of our family here in Adelaide. And I don't say family. Not as in the family, the family of Adelaide. How do you find the creative vibe in the city?
Well, first of all, Americans refer to Australians as British Texans, by the way.
Well,
yeah. I'm from Texas, so...
British Texans.
Yeah, we're a bit more... we're a bit...
Allegedly.
From the part of Texas I'm from, we're a bit more open and...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Texans.
And effusive.
Oh, yeah, and like meat.
Yeah, we love meat, yes. Yeah.
Brisket.
If it bleeds, we'll eat it.
Yeah.
So, don't go down that road. Don't go down that road. Some of your, like... Moving on. How have I found the creative vibe here? It's interesting. It's somewhat conservative in Adelaide. There is a conservative feel. But I do feel like that is starting to change. I think there's a bigger embracing of the arts. I think a lot of that, ironically, is being driven by streaming stuff like Netflix and Hulu and Amazon. The technology, I think, is ironically driving a lot of the live theater stuff. People are getting more and more interested in content and storytelling. Comedy in particular. You see comedy clubs are filling up everywhere more. And... Also, I think people are looking for reasons to get away from their devices. So, with regard to how it relates to my experience here in Adelaide, like I've experienced the Fringe, which is amazing. It's as good a Fringe festival as there is in the world, in my opinion. So, but that's just 1 month out of the year. And I feel like outside of that, creative people are starting to become a bit more, a bit bigger risk takers. They're getting a little bit away from the just the standard, Shakespeare and Tom Stoppard and like all this, which are great. Like, actually, I shouldn't say Stoppard. Stoppard is like he pushes the boundaries, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, right.
So I think it's headed in the right direction, and like with organizations like SA Playwrights, like that's going to help. And I think it will help. I think another problem that South Australia and Adelaide in particular experience with regard to creative people, there's a bit of a talent drain. So you have really talented people who end up leaving. They go to Melbourne, Sydney, or they go to the United States. Or they go to New York, LA or New York. And we want them to stay here. They don't need to go there anymore.
I tend to disagree to a certain extent, but I guess because I've
happening less now.
I guess because I've been doing it for a long time, is I've been working with a lot of really creative people.
You're right.
In this town, like yourself and Matt, and I've just finished Doll's House at the Bakehouse. Those guys were fantastic, and Nathan, who's young, passionate, driven, Stark Productions, Tony. Like, there is a pool here, but of talented, driven people who want to tell stories and.
It's accessible here. That's what's great.
Yeah,
it's financially accessible. Yeah. If you want to shoot a film, you can. It's fine. You're like the barriers to entry here are so much lower than they are in a Melbourne, Sydney, L.A., Chicago, New York, London. You can actually make it happen here.
Yeah,
and I think that's going to encourage really talented people such as yourselves and other people we know to stay. So if they get that really tempting offer to go to LA or whatever, maybe they say, you know what, I'm going to stay here. I'm going to make it happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, I think there's some great opportunities here, particularly with the accessible and affordable venues that we have. And like a group of enthusiastic people who take risks, I think, because you know, you can, why not? Yeah. You're nothing to lose.
Yeah, absolutely.
Apart from, you know, your dignity.
Yeah, no, I never had any to begin with.
That's right. You start from zero.
Put your clothes on, Jimmy. There's listeners listening. You
can't spend what you don't have.
Yeah, exactly. Look, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you guys, and I can't wait to be in your show, Jimmy,
as Hank,
and present it as Hank Salzman. And
listen, the seven people who listen to this, Matt Hawkins is amazing, and he is incredible. We all know about James McCluskey Garcia. Yeah. We know what he can do as an actor, but this is going to be a revelation.
Of
Matthew P. Hawkins,
on one form or another.
That's right.
But gentlemen, thank you so much for being on the show, we'll see you again very soon.
Yeah, thank you, Matteo. Thank you.